The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that gives you expert solutions for your transactional banking needs. That's Africanacity. APSA is a registered FSP. Good evening and welcome to The Money Show. Looking forward to your company this evening as we look at the big money stories of the day, including another very, very big fallback on global markets today. The gold price hitting its best levels ever, about 27,000 rand an ounce. So if you've got a Kruger Rand stashed away somewhere, it's worth a lot more than it was at the beginning of the week. Plus, we will play the Brutal Biz quiz as we wrap up the week and bring you some of the best bits from The Money Show than the week that has been.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious.
Well, the world's second biggest producer of platinum group metals, it's Anglo American Platinum, has shut down a crucial plant in Rustenburg. It's going to negatively affect its ability to produce the sort of volumes that investors have become used to in recent years. The share price fell sharply in double digits, taking its major shareholder Anglo American down with it. Alan Seckham is the resources editor at Business Day. There was an explosion at this thing called a converter plant a month ago. Today, a shutdown. Why is such a big gap, Alan Seckham?
Hi, Bruce. The thing is that this concentrator plant is the link between the concentrator and the refinery, and it takes iron out of the mat and then allows it to be refined. So with that out of the system, Amplat can't put any PGMs through its refineries, and it's estimated that it's going to take about 900,000 ounces of platinum group metals out of the markets this year. And it's going to have a hell of an impact on their financials. The CFO reckoned about 18 million rand less in earnings before interest, tax, and depreciation. 18 billion less than they were expecting. So it's a really big impact.
It's enormous. Do we know how long this then stays out of production for?
So they've got two plants. As you mentioned, the first one had the explosion, and then they started with the second plant because they've got two matching plants in case something happens to the one. And then on the second plant, they discovered this ingress of water and they couldn't find out where it was. And the last thing you need in a high temperature melting metal environment is water in your system. So they've shut that down as well. And they're reckoning the second plant is going to take about 80 days to fix. And the first plant will only be up and running again by the second quarter of next year.
My goodness me, this is deadly serious. Hence the declaration of force majeure. And force majeure is no small matter. Basically, it says, look, we won't be able to meet our contractual obligations. These are unforeseen disruptions. It's out of our control. So please be patient. Your call is important to us.
Bruce, look, I've been covering this industry for nearly 20 years now. And it's the first time I've seen a force majeure of this size in the platinum sector, certainly from Anglo-American Platinum. This is really, really big. And for the global market, where rhodium and palladium are in such deficit and the prices are so high, there's quite a lot of that metal coming out that's not going to come to the market now from Anglo-American Platinum. So, it's just going to add to the tension in the market.
Does this have anything to do then with the very sudden resignation of Chris Griffith, which has probably happened around the same time as this explosion? I mean, there are a couple of coincidences here. Are they purely coincidences?
No, look, my understanding was the decision by Chris to resign was made during the end of last year, which precedes all of this.
Okay.
All of these events at these concentrator plants.
There's an old saying, one man's meat is another man's murder. Something bad happens to somebody, something good happens on the other side. Certainly the rivals of Anglo American Platinum, which is the second biggest producer of platinum group metals in the world, will then have an opportunity to up their production to fill the gap that will be left.
If only it was that simple, Bruce, if only. the problem is every other refinery is operating at full speed. With the very high prices you're seeing in platinum, in palladium and rhodium, and the problems we've been having with Eskom supplying electricity to these plants, everyone's got large inventories that they're trying to work through, and they are going hell for leather to get this metal into the market and get these high prices. So there's not a lot of space to expand production. And the big question now is where Chris Griffith was talking about perhaps speaking to its peers in the industry to try and see if they could treat this material at other companies. But everyone I've spoken to today just says they're absolutely full and going to be so for another year or two.
Does that mean that there are going to be global supply constraints? Because if that's the case, the prices of these things could go even higher than they have. And they've gone stratospheric in the last 12 to 18 months as it is.
Well, they have. The thing is that this coronavirus, the COVID-19, is slowing down car demand in places like China. And that's a really big market. And petrol cars use palladium and rhodium in their anti-pollution devices. So if car sales are falling, people are not making these cars as quickly as they used to in the quantities that they used to. The demand for the metal comes down. So net, you know, maybe this metal coming off the market from Anglo Platinum is timed with the downturn in demand from car makers. So net, we should be even.
Interesting perspectives as always. Thank you, Alan Seckham, the resources editor at Business Day. Force majeure at Anglo American Platinum. Share price down sharply and rivals went up in anticipation of higher metals prices. But good point from Alan Seckham there in terms of potential drop off in demand for new vehicles. But there can be very few environments for viruses to spread better in the very confined, warm, damp conditions in underground mines, and it's forced the Minerals Council of South Africa to think really fast on how to deal with the potential of COVID-19. Tutula Balfour is the head of health department at Minerals Council South Africa. And I suppose, Tutula, also, when miners go underground, they get packed like sardines into the lift cages that go down. It's a very, very close, confined area. What sort of steps are you taking to mitigate the risk?
Even Bruce and the listeners, you are quite right. As a mining, we have realized that we need to be very proactive in terms of addressing the possibility of an epidemic very early so that we are well prepared, but we don't panic. And as you say, people work in gangs and, you know, they travel long distances in confined spaces. So we have put in place measures for our members, you know, in terms of distributing educational material. The members themselves have done the same. We have a plan where we are increasing employee education and promotion, health promotion. We believe that this phase is the right time to be, you know, across the board, improving health education, especially because it is going to assist us even with other common conditions like influenza, which is coming up, you know, in the winter season. So the measures we put in now, like hand hygiene, cough hygiene, will be coming very handy to reduce even the cases of influenza that we would have. Health worker education is the other aspect that we are looking at, so that the health workers are ready, and that is, of course, being guided by the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. And we've advised our companies to start stocking up on essentials, which is consumables, you know, masks, sanitizers, and temperature monitors.
I mean, essentially upping health protocols. Have you ever done anything like this before? I mean, has there ever been a need to take these sort of steps, upping these health protocols to this extent before?
I must say, in the time I have been around, which is a fairly long time in the industry, we haven't had to do this. So this virus we are treating quite seriously, but we hope that, you know, the preventive measures will be adequate and that the virus will not spread, you know, throughout the country. Another matter I didn't mention was, you know, travel. We have executives who travel a lot, and therefore, you know, we advise again regarding it has to be essential travel that people undertake, and should anyone then feel sick. In fact, some companies, if you have been to the areas which have COVID-19 already now, they allow you to stay at home for 14 days to ensure that you do not infect anyone else when you come back.
Tutula Balfour, thank you, from the Minerals Council of South Africa. Daniel Silk, listening to that, the political economy analyst at the Political Futures Consultancy. This is a health issue. It's also a massive political hot potato around the world, Daniel Silk. And politically, South Africa seems to be getting ahead of the messaging, and the health minister everywhere today appealing for calm, appealing for all of us to stick to the facts of COVID-19 and the coronavirus, doing what seems to be a very laudable job so far.
Yes, hello, Bruce. Look, I think, you know, it's early days. It's only day two of having a verifiable case in South Africa, yet for 2 days running, I think we have seen under the guidance of the Minister of Health, Dr. Zweli Mkhize, you know, put forward, I think, a very credible message. It's a message that looks as though he's in control. He certainly speaks with authority. And to be perfectly honest, when you look at some of the other global leaders and some of the other experts internationally in the political realm, we have to take equal responsibility. You know, we have done quite well in relation to perhaps some of the more mixed messaging we've seen elsewhere. I hope this continues, and it's relatively easy, I suppose, at the moment, given that we've really only had one case that doesn't look as though it's too serious. But for the moment, the message to the public, I think, is from government is more assured than I've heard them before. And I think they speak with a certain credibility, and that's something I'm not always keen to compliment government on.
Well, certainly before the case, there was an outbreak of the case. There were lots of meetings behind closed doors. There's been a lot of planning around this. One just hopes that our health system can hold up in the event of a significant number of cases should, and well, when they occur.
Yeah, look, I think that's the key issue here. I mean, if this snowballs into multiple cases, especially if it is a domestic transfer of the illness as well, can there be containment given the somewhat perilous state of our public health care system in South Africa across the board, particularly in poorer parts of the country? So, you know, the proof will be in the pudding over time. But I do think that at the very least, we're seeing substantial cooperation between South Africa and the World Health Organization. And they themselves, only this afternoon, have particularly singled out South Africa as the one nation that is working very closely with their particular protocol on this issue. And I think if South Africa does stick to that protocol, it may well find that if it applies itself and it looks as though it's motivated to apply itself, and there are probably political reasons other than humanitarian reasons involved in that, then perhaps we can come out of this looking a little bit better, or government certainly can.
Daniel Silk, thank you, the political economy analyst at the Political Futures Consultancy this evening, as we go into day two of COVID-19. It turns out the guy who's got the COVID-19 is the brother of a friend. Oh, so how many degrees of separation is that? It always feels suddenly a bit closer to home, doesn't it?
The Money Show.
The Markets.
David Peacock from Sunlum Private Wealth is our market commentator this evening. When last did you have a week this rough, David Peacock? I mean, the rough isn't ending, because, I mean, the Dow's down about 3%, the S&P 500's down sharply, virtually every index in the world in negative territory.
Bruce, it's been the second roughest week after last week, which was even harder. So
was it? Okay.
So we lost 11% last week, and basically this week, miraculously, we're only down sort of, I think, three odd percent. So on a relative basis, a lot more volatility. And unfortunately, Bruce, it looks like for now this is going to continue, particularly in terms of the coronavirus and the sort of spreading of this virus, and in many respects the uncertainty in terms of how seriously or not seriously a person or a company or a nation needs to take this the actual pandemic.
I mean, the markets are not quite pricing in Armageddon yet, but they're pricing in a version of calamity that may or may not transpire.
Correct. So if you look at, for example, that US 10-year, that went down to 0.77 early on today.
I saw it at 0.666, which was all very biblical at one point. But I mean, yeah, it's fallen very, very sharply. This is the interest rate that that you will get on US treasuries. And this is, I mean, this is plumbing lows that we haven't seen before.
Over 10 years, Bruce, which is very significant. And in many respects, that does give you an implicate or a view of the sort sort of worry within the world in terms of how significant the knock-on effect of this could be. So, you know, again, as I say, it's very difficult to draw the line between let's just be sensible about this. It will be under control if you manage and monitor things carefully. You know, you'll be able to get through it. But ultimately, you know, are we getting all the correct data in terms of the actual period that this is in incubation, the number of people that are actually infected? You know, can you actually sort of hold this for longer before you actually start showing, symptoms?
Yeah, and that is the big concern, of course, and neither of us is a medical practitioner of any description. So therefore, we should talk about markets. And I mean, one of the big beneficiaries, of course, was gold at one point over 27,000 rand an ounce. I mean, Kruger rands have never been that valuable. It's correct. Down to about 26,000 now. So again, the volatility in that gold market is very present.
Yeah, so that we have seen that fairly strong move in the last while. In terms of South African gold companies, we're not seeing the sort of highs that we had just a while ago. I think it's sort of at the beginning of the year. So you're not seeing, from a price perspective, the same sort of level. But there's a lot more interest coming into these gold shares as people go and look for alternatives in terms of the bond market, the equity market, so precious metals as an alternative.
Yeah, and the huge story, okay, I mean, we talk about precious metals, Anglo American Platinum down 14%, taking Anglo's down 6% with it. Yeah. And that's, this processing plant in Rustenburg out of commission, and then the second processing plant out of commission. I mean, it's just the lightning doesn't strike twice until it does.
Yeah.
It's a huge blow for Anglo American Platinum.
It certainly is, and then obviously the knock-on effect would be to Anglo American itself. So from that perspective, you know, our sort of valuation would be sort of around 22 rand a share, just in terms of on a valuation side. In terms of if you look sort of 1 year forward in terms of earnings, you know, then you're looking a lot more material. So, you know, the sort of indications is that it is going to take some time for this to sort of have a tidy up period and actually getting back into production again. But ultimately, in terms of Anglo American, you're looking at sort of 3.60 rand just from a valuation point of view. So, you know, clearly we've got to see, as you said earlier, in terms of a perfect storm, you've got a situation where possibly the commodity cycle was moving towards a situation of topping out and possibly easing lower on the basis that the expectation was that global growth was possibly slowing down. Now you've got a situation where there is a lot of concern about what the impact of this virus is going to have on global growth for the next 6 months possibly, or maybe longer. And then you have a situation like this where, you know, this plant is pretty much out of production for an extended period of time. So unfortunately, a perfect storm and very difficult to quantify in total until you know more details. And in some ways you go and look at something like, for example, a Sasol, where they've had similar
talk
issues.
Talk about perfect storms. Sheesh. And this is perfect storm after perfect storm after perfect storm. Because not only do the Russians say to OPEC, we don't agree with the fact that you should cut oil production by 1.5 million barrels a day, so the oil price falls to $47 a barrel.
Yep.
Sasol then gets a downgrade on its debt, and it's got buckets of debt because it went and spent a whole bunch more money than it should have in America.
Yeah. So just in terms of that debt, we think that they will be able to handle that level of debt. Those debt covenants, they have already adjusted. So they were at 3. They've adjusted them to sort of 3.5. Just in terms of Sasol's position at the moment, they're sitting at about 2.9. So from that perspective, from a financing point of view, it looks like they are okay. But the point you make is in terms of the Russians saying we're not going to slow down in terms of our production. Therefore, this oil price stays sub $50. And from that perspective, that will have a knock-on effect on Sasol for a longer period, possibly.
David Peacock from Sunlum Private Wealth this evening on The Money Show.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that gives you expert solutions for your transactional banking needs. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Busy, busy day around the world. Of course, markets under huge pressure. But this number reflects pre-panic on coronavirus. The U.S. economy last month created 273,000 jobs. It takes their unemployment rate down to 3.5%. An extraordinary success rate in terms of actually growing value in an economy and creating jobs. We'll play you the best bits in just a couple of minutes' time. We'll also bring you the Brutal Biz Quiz on this Friday night. Got some fabulous questions for you on that. On your next Money Show, Michelin star chef Jan Hendrik van der Westhuizen, otherwise known as Jan, joins us as our Make Money Monday special edition guest. I cannot wait for that. He is one of our greatest exports. Also, the Gibbs Professor Nicola Klein, an avid business book reader, reviewing one of her favorite books, The Rebel Ideas, The Power of Diverse Thinking. That is all coming up next time on The Money Show. And of course, whatever's happening in markets, if you're brave enough.
Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Welcome to The Money Show. Best bits time. And South Africa's been in recession for a while now. Some would say maybe even a decade. Certainly, we are back in recession from a technical perspective. The economy shrank by 1.4% in the fourth quarter of last year and takes it to the second recession in 2 years. But Gina Schoeman at Citibank, she's smart. She says the country's actually been in recession-like conditions for a decade.
It's not so much about whether it's a technical recession or whether we got there by a couple of decimals or not. It's the mere fact that for 5 years in a row, this economy has grown below population growth. So for 5 years running, everyone has been getting poorer. And I think people feel that. And the spillover into the economy of that lack of confidence, the social unrest, the social frustration, I think we're starting to feel that too.
Yeah, it most certainly is. Because without growth, the odds of improving people's lives are close to zero. And that's, I mean, we're 10.3 million people in South Africa who, even if they wanted to find a job, can't find a job. And you don't improve that without growth.
Absolutely. I mean, if we look back, you know, what's good about getting a Q4 print is that we can look back on a whole year and now a whole decade. And you see the extent of that deterioration year after year after year. The last decade we've just come out of is well below the averages of previous decades since being in a democracy. And I think 2019 just shows us people lost jobs. We had about 108,000 jobs lost. And the bottom line for me is that if we start looking across the economy, you see how broadly based the deterioration is. The tertiary sector, which is typically South Africa's darling, so the retail sales and your financial services, those are typical sectors that are quite resilient. They typically stay afloat and they help build quite a lot of growth momentum, or at least they used to. If you've had almost a decade of your primary and secondary sectors, so that's your mining and manufacturing and transport and construction, the longer those deteriorate for, or the fewer services they will need themselves, plus the less income they're generating for consumers to spend, which are two channels that then feed back into your tertiary sector. So we need to be very careful here because we really have lost growth momentum in this economy. And with this coronavirus floating around now for the cure, we risk falling into negative growth for 2020.
Real concern, of course it is. And then how is the tourism industry going to be affected? Certainly, you go through airports nowadays and lots of people are wearing rubber gloves and masks, regardless of whether or not they might work to protect themselves. But people are comforted by it. A couple of people on aeroplanes wearing masks. Every time the industry tries to improve itself, it gets hit by something, whether it's bad policies or economic problems. And now it's the threat of a pandemic. Well, we spoke to Chifiwa Chivengwa, who is the chief executive of the Tourism Business Council of South Africa.
We have about 722,000 people that are employed within the tourism industry, and China is a very important market. When we looked at, you know, our strategy for 2030, you know, we said, you know, some of the growth that we're going to be having is going to be coming from China. And there are a whole lot more people, you know, outbound travel in China reached around 150 million trips, you know, in 2019. So it is a significant market for growth, and it's somewhere where we're looking at, you know, to boost our numbers and to create more jobs. And I believe that, you know, at some point, you know, someone and the clever people in pharmaceuticals will find a way, and the scientists and everybody else who's involved, you know, to have a vaccine for this virus. But at the moment, you know, I think that, you know, for us as a tourism industry, you know, we don't want to, you know, overreact and also underreact. I feel that, you know, we have been preparing ourselves. We have been watching this since December. We have been, you know, getting more information about the virus. And the people that I've spoken to within the industry are quite, you know, confident that, you know, we're moving to the right direction. I have received the briefing from the Department of Health. They have told us, you know, their state of preparedness. And I think that, you know, as an industry, you know, we can't just go and, you know, cancel things, you know, that we've planned, you know, without really looking at the information that's coming in, you know, verifying, you know, the information that's coming in, testing the people that, you know, are suspected, and making sure that as a country, you know, we don't, you know, sort of destroy the business that we have and put the jobs that we have at risk. So there is a lot of balancing act that we are doing. But, you know, we believe that, you know, tourism should continue. And we believe that, you know, there is a whole lot more to benefit. And we just need to be extremely careful, you know, when we, you know, get tourists that are coming to the country, but certainly not canceling people or banning people, you know, from coming to the country.
Chivira Chivangwa, who is the chief executive of the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. This week's Shapeshifter, the brand new chief executive at Transnet, Portia Darby. She's got a huge job on her hands to not only manage Transnet, but also manage perceptions. She happens to have been once, a long time ago, married to a former chief executive of Transnet, who then became a former chief executive at Eskom in the form of Brian Molefe. Now, she's tasked with a turning around of the parastatal, and she says Transnet's got this weird old culture, one of the things that really does need to be tackled.
A massive culture problem. And then what, and in fact, you know, when you, because even why wouldn't you do maintenance to standard? Why is, and I think it's a South African culture problem, by the way, is that we decide that we will comply with certain parts of the law and other parts of the law we will not comply with. So I'm even asking the guys, I say, look, if we're supposed to maintain the infrastructure at this level, how is it that there are no bells ringing, no alarms, nothing, nobody walking in through the door saying, stop your operations. The regulators are saying you can't continue working.
But if nobody's allowed to speak up, how does bad news filter up? How do you know, sitting in a head office, how can you possibly have a finger on every pulse? And if nobody's allowed to tell you that there's bad news, well, the bad news doesn't happen until there's a disaster and then all hell breaks loose.
Well, yes, absolutely. And so that's why functions like capital assurance. And so what happens when you're doing a cost-cutting exercise, what do you cut? You cut capital assurance, you cut internal audit, which would have been the things that have been ringing the alarms for you in advance of the system going wrong. But I also mean that the rail regulators outside of us, so who's watching to make sure that you are maintaining the system at this level and that the minute you dip below that, they call you and they say, hey, you're out of line. So all I'm saying is that it's the whole system that has to change.
Have you, since you were appointed, woken up in the middle of the night one night and gone, what on earth have I done?
Oh, many times. Many, many times. And especially
that's
in
good,
the first
it's healthy.
Month. Yeah. Many times. I had a conversation with the chair about that, and I said, just, we were talking and he was briefing, and we tried to, because I'd never worked with him before until now, is to sort of like, you know, get to know each other. And then towards the end of the conversation, I say, geez, Popo, there are many moments when I sit there and I say, what the? And then he looks at me and says, I said, no, I'm not leaving. I'm just telling you that I have these feelings now and again. But I'm getting a lot more positive now that I'd, you know, we've advertised internally the vacancies that we have at the senior level. And we are soon going to be, we're headhunting as well for some of the senior people. And as soon as we fill that, it starts feeling like I have now got a team that goes in, because there's a hell of a lot of work to do.
Portia Darby taking on that work. She is the new chief executive at Transnet. Rebecca Davis, who is an author, she is a journalist. She works at Daily Maverick. She joined us for Make Money Monday. She recently got herself a retirement annuity. That's not a very hippie type policy, is it?
You know, I've always been fascinated by people who win the lottery, Bruce. And I've read quite a lot of studies about it. I think that there's two key points here. The first is that research shows that most people who win the lottery, including vast amounts, continue to play the lottery, right? Which is fascinating. Why would they do that? And they do that because it's never enough, right? You win 200 million, then you need another 500 million just to top it off. But the other standout takeaway is that people who win the lottery experience a jolt of happiness, which lasts a few months, and then they are deposited right back to their normal emotional state. I mean, there's literal scientific proof that money doesn't bring happiness. In fact, they found that the effects of winning the lottery in terms of disrupting your emotional state are approximately equivalent in the reverse direction to a devastating car accident, for instance, which might leave you paralyzed, that you would be, in the end, returned to your same base emotional state after a period of time. So even winning the lottery, Bruce, just doesn't do anything for you being you.
However, I'm willing to take that risk. All I've got to do is buy a ticket, but I'm too much of a cheapskate. So
what I will say is, what I've always admired about money and rich people is it seems to me that money can buy you the absence of fear. And I think that is really priceless. In my early 20s, I dated someone who was proper rich. And what I admired most about the way she moved through the world was fearlessness. Because when you have loads of money, and I'm talking like loads of money, then I think there is a sense that not much can harm you. You know, you get into trouble with a lawyer, you're going to get the best possible lawyer, you're going to bribe someone, whatever. There's always a way that money can fix your practical problems, and that is something I do envy.
Rebecca Davis, the journalist, fabulous insights. Thank you very much. And if you missed all of those interviews or any of those interviews, you want to catch up, you want to get a bit more detail, go to your favorite podcast app and download our podcast from the week that has been here on The Money Show. In a moment, time to wrap up the week, because that's what we do with a brutal biz quiz. Which museum is the most visited in the world? There is a museum. It gets more visitors than any other in the world. Which is it? I'd like you to give me a call. You know the numbers. 011-883-0702-021-446-0567.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that gives you expert solutions for your transactional banking needs. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. The Money Show. The Brutal Biz Quiz.
Let's get ourselves a whiz of the biz quiz this evening. Which museum is the most visited in the world? Kieran in Sandton.
That's the Louvre, Bruce.
The Louvre, absolutely. Saturday, French government banned all indoor gatherings of more than 5,000 people in a bid to curb the coronavirus. The Louvre Museum in Paris closed on Sunday, remained closed on Monday, and it's quite scary. Which company was founded in 1988 by a man called Brian Joffe? Kieran?
Hello?
Which company was founded in 1988 by a man called Brian Joffe?
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't quite know that one.
You don't know that one? That's interesting. Please stay listening. Maurice, or is it Morris, in Newlands in Cape Town?
Hi there.
Which company was founded in 1988 by Brian Joffe?
Bidvest.
Bidvest is absolutely right. I spoke to Lindsay Ralphs this week. He is the outgoing CEO about the group's financial performance. What do you call two consecutive quarters of a decline in gross domestic product?
A recession.
It is a recession, Morris. It is a recession. Who was the chairman and chief executive of General Electric for 20 years from 1981?
Oh, gee whiz, he just retired.
Well, he did, quite permanently, actually.
Yes. Sorry, I can't think of his name.
Don't apologise, Morris, don't apologise. Brian, who just retired permanently after being chief executive of General Electric for 20 years?
Jack Welch.
Jack Welch, absolutely right. Titan of US industry. He died this week at the age of 84. I once had to interview him via a video link, and he was having a absolutely cantankerous day at an audience of 5,000 people at the Sandton Convention Centre. And after 2 minutes of interviewing Jack Welch, it was clear that we were going to get nothing out of him, and I was instructed to cut the interview. So that's my brush with the greatness of Jack Welch. Brian, you are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz this Friday night. Well done.